Do you trust the police?
Well, I did, and I'd like to.
The roommate of Terrence Williams, Jason Gonzalez, was being interviewed by investigators several years after Terrence's disappearance. A tip had come in about a possible lead in the case on Florida's East Coast. The tip never bore out, as far as we know. But when I listened to the interview, I was struck by the conversation, because it shows a serious consequence of this unsolved crime, of a lot of unsolved crimes, the erosion of trust in the police.
Do you have any reason to distrust us here today?
I don't know you guys. I didn't want any type of manipulation going on between, you know, any law enforcement. Ever since that happened, I was like, okay, you know, I was like, why is this happening? You know, the last guy I saw him was a cop, and another person missing was that same cop. Collier County is a good sheriff's department, and I don't want them to try to hide or cover up or treat this as, oh, it's just one of the good old boys that nothing's happened. You know what I'm saying? I hope that you guys would be truthful.
I don't care what business you're in, whether it be the church, cop, military, fireman, you're going to have your 2%. Do we agree on that? You're going to always have your bad apples.
Right, exactly. Now, my thing was, and you're asking me about my trust, was how do you guys handle your 2%?
A legitimate question, because for years, it wasn't clear to the public or the media that the sheriff's office was trying to find criminal evidence against Deputy Stephen Calkins. Did investigators try to find out if Calkins was one of their so-called 2%? Let's also acknowledge that the bad apples in law enforcement wield weapons and power. In this episode, we'll dig into how the Collier Sheriff's Office investigated one of their own, and what they and other agencies did to search for evidence in the disappearances of Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. We had lots of questions. Did they search Deputy Calkins' patrol car? His house? Did they get his DNA? Was the investigation thorough? Impartial? Were there loose ends? Should more still be done? Because in the end, their efforts never led to Calkins or anyone being arrested or charged with anything. I'm Janine Zeitlin, and this is The Last Ride from the USA Today Network Florida and WGCU Public Media, distributed by the NPR Network. Episode 7, The Investigation and the Loose Ends. First, a quick refresher on the various investigations. There were two internal affairs investigations into Deputy Calkins after the disappearances. Those are like HR complaints in that the Collier Sheriff's Office investigates whether officers have broken procedures and rules. The first one came when Felipe Santos went missing in 2003. His brother filed a complaint. Calkins was exonerated even though his story about dropping Felipe off at a Circle K couldn't be backed up. Terrence Williams vanished 3 months after Felipe, in 2004. And like Felipe, he was also last seen in the back of Calkins' patrol car. Terrence's family then filed a complaint. We've gone over the internal affairs investigations in earlier episodes. In this episode, we'll focus on the criminal investigation, the one that could have led to an arrest. After the second disappearance with the Calkins link, the Collier Sheriff's Office took notice. My colleague Ryan Mills spoke with Lieutenant Jason Rubleski about that.
So Terrence Williams disappeared on January 12th, a few months after Felipe disappeared, and he also was last seen with Steve Calkins. Tell me about how you guys, when and how you connected those dots. Did that happen pretty fast?
I believe it did. It was in the first week or so that Terrence Williams was reported missing, that we kind of said, let's take a look at this a little bit closer than when we just had the one missing persons case. It was just a little bit too much of a coincidence at that point to not investigate it further.
Calkins remains the agency's only person of interest in the disappearances. Retired Collier Sheriff Don Hunter, who was in charge when Felipe and Terrence vanished, said the agency saw the cases as more than missing persons.
This went to the Violent Crimes Bureau of Investigations, was my recollection, because it was missing persons with a suspicion of some other criminal activity. And so therefore it went to the Violent Crimes Bureau. That's rape, armed robbery, murder, essentially.
In the internal affairs investigation tied to Terrence's disappearance, the sheriff's office found Deputy Calkins' statements were misleading and rife with contradictions and lies. Calkins told his agency he wasn't intentionally lying. He denied wrongdoing. As that investigation concluded, Hunter struggled with the decision to fire Calkins because of how it could impact the criminal investigation.
And I had discussions with staff and legal counsel. I said, you know, once I pull that trigger and remove him from the office, I have nothing to compel him to participate in the investigation. He becomes a citizen of Collier County, and he will secure legal counsel and probably refuse to participate any further, which is what occurred.
After firing Calkins in 2004, the sheriff questioned what more could be done.
We couldn't arrest him because we didn't have probable cause. We could invite him to come in and talk to us about anything that he happened to recollect, that he had not already discussed with us, anything. He refused that opportunity.
In the early years after the disappearances, the Collier County Sheriff's Office seemed to deflect attention from the prospect that Calkins may have been involved. Advocates and relatives of the missing men accused the sheriff's office of a cover-up. At a 2006 press conference I attended, Hunter asserted that there was never a criminal investigation into Calkins. I remember thinking, why not? We know now that Hunter wasn't telling us the whole story. In our more recent interview, he said that he couldn't disclose the investigation back then.
Well, finally, we changed that law, and we could at least confirm that we do have an active investigation on Mr. Calkins.
Before that, the sheriff's office was secretly taking steps to find evidence. Let's wade into some of the nitty-gritty related to the searches for evidence implicating Calkins and the efforts to find the missing men. The sheriff's office pulled Deputy Calkins' dispatch calls in late January 2004, about 2 weeks after Terrence disappeared. Those calls likely raised some red flags, or should have. Because, as we've heard in earlier episodes, they revealed contradictions in Calkins' statements. Calkins also uses an offensive tone and description for Terrence's car. In February, the month after Terrence disappeared, records show Collier Sheriff's investigators briefed agents from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, which could investigate independently of the sheriff's office. In March, FDLE interviewed Deputy Calkins. The Collier Sheriff's Office set up surveillance to secretly listen in. I asked FDLE for the audio, but they only had a transcript. Though the interview covered similar territory as the earlier interviews with the sheriff's office, the questioning comes off as a little more skeptical. When Calkins couldn't remember a question of timing, the agent said, "That's a big thing. You would remember that. That scares me." Another key move taken in March was searching Calkins' patrol car, which the sheriff's office did under the guise of doing routine maintenance, according to retired Sheriff Hunter.
We did a complete forensic search of that marked unit because theoretically, Mr. Santos and Mr. Williams, having been transported in that vehicle, even though it was now later in the case and other people had also been in that vehicle, we looked in the trunk trying to find bloodstain, fiber, evidence that something untoward maybe had happened inside the vehicle. We didn't find any, zero, nothing.
Yet we're not sure why the sheriff's office waited until March to search Calkins' patrol car. If someone had something incriminating in their car, nearly 2 months seems like time enough to get rid of it. And we know that the agency did not search Calkins' car after Felipe disappeared in 2003. The sheriff's office did take the step of attaching a GPS to Calkins' car when they searched it.
Thinking that, well, if Calkins was involved in a murder or some malicious element involving this disappearance, that it's not unusual for people to revisit the scene to make sure that everything's as they left it.
They used the GPS data from the car to determine where to search. Hunter said they also used the timing of Calkins' dispatch calls the day he pulled Terrence over.
We had a period of time of 45 minutes between when radio contact was last established. And so we drew imaginary lines all the way around the rest of the county. How far can you go in 45 minutes and return to take the next call? Every undeveloped piece of property in this county, in that area, we're going to search.
In March, the agency helicopter went up to also identify areas to search for evidence. In April, investigators checked the cemetery where Calkins pulled Terrence over. In May, investigators checked areas near the cemetery. They looked around a marina. A dive team searched a lake. Nothing was found.
Ultimately, I asked for ground-penetrating radar, cadaver dogs, aerial searches, ground searches.
And what's striking is that all this was happening while Deputy Calkins was on law enforcement duty. He was still a cop while they were presumably searching for bodies in places he went as a cop. Calkins wasn't suspended from duty until June 2004, 8 months after Felipe Santos vanished, and 5 months after Terrence Williams vanished. Calkins was fired in August. When the sheriff's investigation into Calkins ran dry of leads, Sheriff Hunter asked for more help. In May, a meeting was held that included representatives from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, the FBI, and the U.S. Attorney's Office. Hunter recalled briefing the U.S. Attorney's Office.
What we have is suspicions, and to which the U.S. Attorney said, well, that's true, and you've done all this work with the FBI, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, your own investigators, and you're saying that you haven't gotten to the level yet of probable cause. I said, no, we cannot demonstrate that Mr. Calkins wasn't in some criminal aspect involved in the disappearance of Mr. Williams and Mr. Santos. And I said, you know, what else can we do? And that's when he came up with the search of the house. I said, well, how do we get the search warrant? We don't have probable cause.
So they could not search Calkins's house. Doug Malloy was the chief assistant U.S. attorney at the time. He's now a criminal defense attorney. He told Ryan the multi-agency team met regularly.
Was it unusual to have that many people like on a missing persons case?
Yep.
And while the group sought to exhaust every possible lead, including searching in Mexico for Felipe, Malloy said Calkins was a primary focus.
The investigation was always about a cop.
But by October 2004, that team ran dry of leads. Malloy tried a different approach.
We invited him to come to the grand jury, and this would have been a federal case because of abuse of your law enforcement power.
Malloy told Ryan and my other colleague, Melanie Payne, that the invite didn't go far.
He declined our invitation. You know, that was the last resort, because you invite people to the grand jury, you know, as a target. Most targets refuse that opportunity. Can't have a lawyer in the grand jury, and the proceedings are secret. But that was the last straw.
Have you ever had a law enforcement officer decline to come?
Oh, yeah. Especially when we're investigating him.
Is that particularly damning in any way that he wouldn't want to participate in a grand jury?
If I was his lawyer, I would have said, don't you dare. Because that means that they're out of investigative leads, and they're going to hope that you give them some.
Malloy said they looked at other cases for clues.
Did you guys look at other dead bodies that were popping up around Collier County, Hendry Lee County?
Yeah.
According to the case files, the sheriff's office collected DNA samples from Terrence's mother and Felipe's brother to compare to any remains found. The agency says both Terrence and Felipe have DNA profiles in the FBI missing persons database. Ryan and Melanie decided to take an even deeper dive into the missing persons and unsolved homicide records. They looked for cases with similarities to Felipe and Terrence in Southwest Florida and other places Stephen Calkins had lived. They collected data from 77 law enforcement agencies in Florida, Illinois, and Iowa, where Calkins moved after Florida. They reviewed 339 cases between the three states.
We were trying to get any unsolved homicides from his county and the counties around his county, looking to see if they had missing persons cases or unsolved homicide cases that resembled these cases in any way. I mean, there was some unsolved homicides, but for the most part, they were explainable.
Yet three homicide cases in North Naples raised some questions. According to records, the bodies were found between 1997 and 2003 in woods near Immokalee Road and Interstate 75. Immokalee Road is the road that Terrence and Felipe disappeared from. One case among the three stuck out. That was the unsolved homicide of 44-year-old Sergio Guerrero. Guerrero's skeletal remains were found in June 2003, 4 months before Felipe went missing. Guerrero was shot in the head. Several months before, in January 2003, Guerrero was arrested by the Collier Sheriff's Office for violating probation on a DUI charge. A spokeswoman said he was held in the Collier jail until March, when he was turned over to immigration. My colleague Rachel Hyman-Mercator looked further into the records. Based on her review of summaries written by investigators, no one seems to know what happened between when Guerrero was apparently released from jail and when his remains were found. Another odd detail. The man who found his remains said his supervisor told him he had seen a Collier Sheriff's cruiser in the area a week earlier. But there's no further information on that cruiser in the records. There's no indication in the records that Calkins had anything to do with Guerrero around the time he was killed. Ryan asked Collier Sheriff's Lieutenant Jason Robleski about any homicides in the area where Guerrero was found. Robleski was involved in that investigation, too.
No homicides in North Naples, or for instance, that you would say, well, this one we could maybe see if, is there any reason to connect him to this or anything like that?
No, we haven't been able to find anything certain to go on.
Ryan chased another possibility. He spoke to Thomas Hargrove of the Murder Accountability Project. Hargrove developed an algorithm that uses FBI homicide data to identify clusters of potential serial killings.
So we're looking at the 16-year period from the year 2000 to the year 2015. Collier County had a 79% clearance rate. Now, that's very good for a, you know, not a rural community. You're solving more murders than usual. And if you're telling me that there's a serial killer active here, I would say, well, that could be true, but you couldn't prove it by me, that there does not appear to be an unnaturally large number of unsolved murders.
Hargrove also looked at Lee County, which is directly north of Collier and where Terrence attended the party the night before he vanished.
Actually, Lee County has been doing a pretty good job. Most male murders get solved in Lee County.
When Ryan, Melanie, and I had started reporting this podcast, we hadn't expected to solve the cases, though of course we would have liked to. But we could bring our skeptical reporter eyes to the criminal investigation. So along with figuring out what the sheriff's office actually did, another goal was to find out, were there any loose ends, unexamined threads, or unanswered questions? One report in particular made my heart beat faster. It hadn't been part of the public record when I first reported this story. It was a January 2004 report on Terrence's Cadillac. The report said a small amount of blood was found on the front passenger seat. The sheriff's office collected two swabs of blood along with a portion of the seat containing the blood. But whose blood was it? Had it been tested? According to records, in 2006, the swabs were sent off for DNA analysis. The report said the DNA profiles from the swabs were consistent with belonging to the same female, but it did not indicate who that could be. However, the analysis did rule out Terrence as a match. I asked the Collier Sheriff's Office if they had compared the blood swabs to the DNA of anyone else, including Calkins, though obviously wrong gender. The Sheriff's Office said the DNA found was such a small amount that it, quote, failed to provide a viable evidentiary value, meaning there wasn't enough to test it against anyone else but Terrence's mother, Marcia Williams, who told me she didn't know anything more about the blood.
Do you have any thoughts on who that might belong to?
I have no idea. No idea. It was never even mentioned. Yeah. I just said it wasn't Terrence's.
Another big question we didn't see answered in the records. Did the police have Calkins's DNA? Melanie and Ryan asked Lieutenant Robleski of the Collier Sheriff's Office.
As I'm a big fan of British cop shows, and in British cop shows, they say they take the DNA of all the people who work for the investigative units. Yeah.
No, to answer your question, we typically don't have our DNA taken.
It's just not on record.
Right, correct.
So it's possible that you have obtained DNA from Steve Calkins? I guess I'm trying to see if there's, if his DNA showed up at a homicide scene from 30 years ago in Illinois, would that be something you guys would be able to find out?
Yeah, I'd have to check to see if we had his DNA. I don't know if we do. I would say we probably don't, just because we would never have had probable cause to obtain it.
A Collier Sheriff spokeswoman said the agency does not have Calkins' DNA. You need consent to collect someone's DNA, unless you have a warrant or a judicial order. And to get those, you need probable cause, which the sheriff's office said it did not and does not have. But Terrence's mother and her lawyer, Ben Crump, also brought up this point.
If he's innocent, why don't he just give it up? If he's innocent, right?
Exactly.
Another unanswered question that came up is tied to a claim that appears at least twice in records. Could Terrence be heard in one of the dispatch calls after Calkins said he dropped him off? The question came up in the 2004 interview that the Florida Department of Law Enforcement did with Calkins. Calkins says, "That don't sound right, damn." To which the agent says, "It doesn't sound right at all. You're right, but it is." Later, the agent backpedals and says that maybe the voice was the dispatcher. However, a similar detail appears in a civil lawsuit filed by the family of Terrence Williams, the suit that accused Calkins of murdering Terrence. We'll tell you about the outcome of that suit in the next episode. The suit said that Terrence's voice could be heard in the background of the same dispatch call, which, the suit notes, would have meant that Terrence was with Deputy Calkins after he claimed Terrence's car was abandoned and had it towed. We don't know Terrence's voice and didn't hear anyone clearly when we listened to that call, but it seems that someone else did. After reviewing our reporting, I was disappointed that we hadn't narrowed in on any potential new leads. I called Ryan and Melanie. They had since left the newspaper, but were still invested in seeing the podcast through. I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing anything that we hadn't already talked about. We discussed the blood in Terrence's car, timeline discrepancies, and interviews investigators should have done with Calkins' relatives, but didn't, at least according to what we saw in the case files.
I always thought they should have called in his wife for questioning, his brother. I'll tell you what always bothered me was when he talked about stopping at that, remember where he looks for pervs in the bathroom, that little park with the boat ramps, but he knew the guy who worked at this boat ramp. Did they question that guy? Did they drag the area around that water? Was there anything about a boat going out from there? That always seemed like something that could have been explored and wasn't.
That detail came from an internal affairs interview Calkins did in 2004. When questioned about his hazy timeline, Calkins said he may have stopped by the Cocahatchie River Park on the day of Terrence's disappearance. The park is about 2 miles north of where Terrence was last seen with Calkins, and it connects to the Gulf of Mexico. Calkins said he went there all the time to use the bathroom, talk to his friend in Marine Patrol, and check for, quote, park perverts. Records show that the sheriff's office did reach out to the Marine Patrol officer, but he could not confirm or refute if Calkins was there. I looked for contact information for the officer. Unfortunately, I found his obituary. He died a decade ago. He was the fourth person with possibly critical information to this mystery, who I knew of, who had died in the years since. It underscored how hard it is to get new information in cold cases when sources take that information to the grave. Ryan, Melanie, and I circled back to the question of what else could be investigated.
The other thing that I think that we tried to do was this idea of, like, are there other things you could tie to him? And I was not able to find anything. I don't know if there's more that can be done there. You know, that might be an opportunity for a private investigator to just tail him for a little while. Where does he go? What does he do?
I asked if we could hire a private investigator to review all the records we had found related to Calkins and the disappearances. We don't have the budget, but someone else might. Maybe Tyler Perry? The actor and filmmaker has offered a reward for tips leading to a resolution in the cases. The largest loose end is finding Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams and finding out what happened to them. But there is also this.
We don't have a good motive for if Calkins did this, why he would have done it. There's nothing concrete that would say this is why this guy would want these guys to disappear.
One loose end the sheriff's office did tie up many years after the disappearances was searching the Naples home of Stephen Calkins after he moved to Iowa. When I interviewed Calkins 2 years after the disappearances, he told me he was conflicted about staying in Naples. He said, quote, "Part of me wants to stay here and go back to work and show my innocence. Part of me wants to go back to the Midwest and get the hell out of here." I was surprised he stayed as long as he did, even as Tyler Perry brought more attention to the cases. While he remained in Florida, the Collier County Sheriff's Office continued to watch him. In 2013, the agency learned Calkins had been involved in a dispute that led to him quitting his job at UPS. According to a report, Calkins refused to follow instructions and then repeatedly yelled, "F*** you." He was escorted to the office, where he wrote a note that said simply, "I quit." A chief suggested finding out what type of car Calkins drove because, quote, "without employment, he potentially represents a threat to anyone he blames for his circumstances." I knew Calkins stayed because in another weird connection, for several years I lived in the same North Naples neighborhood. It happens to be off Immokalee Road. I'd often take the route home that took me by Calkins's house, hoping to catch a glimpse of something that might tell me more about him. The modest, single-story home always looked very normal, quiet, well-kept. But eventually, the Calkins family put the house up for sale. In January 2016, Monica Kaysen, an advocate for the missing men, learned Calkins had moved. She emailed the sheriff's office asking for an immediate search. She noted that Tyler Perry told her he would buy the home if need be. The sheriff's office tried something else first.
And as I'm driving in the driveway, a 239 number comes up, and it was actually the sheriff's department. And wanted to talk to me. I said, and I told him, I said, "listen, I think I know why you're calling."
Joey Trombley told Ryan that he had already Googled the name of the previous owner of his new home when he received this call from the Collier Sheriff's Office. So he knew a little about the suspicions around Stephen Calkins.
And they went on to say that they've never had access to the house. And would we be willing to let them have access to the house? My first reaction was, "You mean to tell me you haven't been on the property?" And the response was, during the investigation, he became uncooperative and there was not enough circumstantial evidence to get a warrant to go on the property. And they were very clear to us, "You do not have to let us on the property." And we said, no, do what you got to do.
A month after Trombley bought the home, the sheriff's office arrived at his door in February 2016 with four members of a canine search and rescue team and three certified cadaver dogs.
So the first visit was they brought cadaver dogs, went through the house, each room, through the garage, through the lanai, and they had sonar equipment, and they were just checking the whole place out. But the cadaver dogs hit in two spots by, there was a 40-foot by 7-foot cement slab just outside the lanai, where he had like a portable basketball net at the end of it.
At that point, the reactions of the dogs must have offered hope for a breakthrough in the cases. The potential of finding physical evidence. A crime scene technician also flagged part of a concrete pad in Calkins's yard. She noted that it settled differently in the soil from the other sides.
At that point, they said they may want to do a dig, but they get back to us.
The next month, the Collier Sheriff's Office returned with more people. A contractor, a Florida Department of Law Enforcement agent, a senior FBI agent, and a forensic anthropologist. Trombley said the team removed the concrete pad in the yard and searched for evidence. They found pieces of black plastic and part of an electrical cord. But the items did not meet FBI standards for DNA analysis, a sheriff's spokeswoman said.
They got back to us and said there was nothing, absolutely nothing. I'm not passing judgment on anybody, but I was hoping there was something there that could bring this to a conclusion and give some relief to the family.
Did you guys ever find anything weird in the house or anything suspicious that you came across and said, "hey, this thing is odd"?
No, nothing. Absolutely nothing. I mean, I heard the cadaver dogs were there, that they would have found something. And my understanding of the cadaver dogs that came in were trained to smell death longer than 10 years.
The absence of evidence has been a primary roadblock in advancing the criminal investigation, said Lieutenant Robleski of the Collier Sheriff's Office.
The means that we have taken to try to find evidence, the searches that have been done that have just found nothing, are frustrating for the Sheriff's Office and me personally, but I can't even imagine what it must be like for the families, and to not be able to give them any closure, any information about their loved ones is especially frustrating.
Former federal prosecutor Doug Malloy shared a similar sentiment.
I've been in criminal law for 35 years, and I'll tell you flat out, it's the strangest case and most unsettling case, because most of the time, we proceed to indictment and trial.
While law enforcement may still have suspicions about Calkins, they couldn't answer whether he was one of the bad apples.
I've done police corruption cases all my career. And they think, well, you know, closed ranks or, you know, I don't know, secret society, whatever the hell they think. But it's not that. Like I said, there's nothing like it in my career. That at the end of all that, all those resources, all those people, that we can't find something that would lead to his arrest.
Are you confident that he did it?
Can you get around that one undeniable statement? They went missing immediately after contact with him. That's the only way to answer your question. Couldn't prove it.
After years of our own research into this mystery, my colleagues and I had ended up where other investigations had landed. A standstill. And we're back to the fact that the Collier County Sheriff's Office was able to prove Stephen Calkins was the last person verified to be seen with both Felipe Santos and Terrence Williams. We've heard the highlights of the criminal investigation, but was it enough? And after nearly 20 years since the disappearances, can more be done? More strategizing, more searches. After all, isn't it still the responsibility of the sheriff's office to solve these cases? Perhaps even more so because one of their own is the only person of interest? FBI special agent turned lawyer Stuart Kaplan told us the Collier Sheriff's Office made a serious misstep in the investigation. He wasn't part of it, but is often called upon as a legal analyst for the media because of his experience.
The first singular thing that should have been done is that Collier County should have certainly passed off this investigation to an outside agency. And that is because I am steadfast that law enforcement is incapable of investigating their own.
Kaplan described how law enforcement should react when a person lies or is untruthful in the context of a missing persons case.
As soon as there is information that is developed that that individual has lied or has skated or skirted the truth, they become prime suspect number one, and the full court press of any tool in the toolbox will be pulled out to try to develop information and evidence to either prove or disprove complicity. And so as soon as the sheriff's office realized that this person evaded being forthright, that in and of itself should have been the alarm that should have gone off to say, hold on a minute, now we have something that is extremely troubling.
It's clear that the sheriff's office did find it troubling when they couldn't nail Calkins to consistent timelines and his stories changed about his interactions with Terrence. But the case files don't reflect that the full court press was immediately put on Calkins. It doesn't appear the investigation started aggressively digging into Calkins until nearly 2 months after Terrence vanished. The sheriff's office didn't hand off the criminal investigation, but they did call in partner agencies within the first few months, as we talked about earlier with Doug Malloy. Melanie asked Malloy for his opinion on the quality of the investigation.
Do you think that the Collier County Sheriff's Office appropriately looked at this?
100%. They wouldn't have brought it to me. They bring it to an outside agency who had already investigated their agency. And they knew that we would be thorough.
retired Sheriff Don Hunter said their investigation was uniquely thorough.
There is no other case that I can recall in the history of the Collier County Sheriff's Office where the FBI, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, every element of the chain of command was involved in investigating the disappearance of Terrence Williams and Felipe Santos. Extraordinary effort was made in these cases.
Ryan asked Hunter about allegations that the cases may have been handled differently if the missing men were not people of color. The interview occurred in 2020, not long after George Floyd's murder and the protests that followed. The question seemed to strike a nerve in the law enforcement veteran.
Based on what evidence would they make that statement? Because what? All law enforcement are bad people. I can tell you that as far as my recollection, we never had a George Floyd case, ever. And that the people that I served with, 99%, 95% were all excellent people. But hey, if you've got some revelation, an epiphany, please share it. But don't accuse us of not doing our job.
Even after he retired in 2009, Hunter continued to follow the case. In records requests, I saw emails he sent to the sheriff's office making suggestions. Yet, as we've heard in earlier episodes, both families saw flaws in the sheriff's investigation. And it seems that the investigation into whether Calkins was responsible was delayed because the agency didn't believe one of their own could be responsible. Was that precious time lost? Would the outcome have been different if they started really digging into Calkins as soon as Felipe Santos vanished? I asked Monica Kaysen of the Q Center for Missing Persons for her assessment of the investigation.
My opinion is when Felipe got missing, I think it was possibly because he wasn't a citizen that things weren't pushed. But I think it just kind of was like, well, we'll look into it. And I think they did. And the law officer was definitely ranked above the victim. And the officer was believed over the victim. If they even considered him a victim, then Terrence gets missing. Where they screwed up is they, whoever this is responsible, they took somebody who mattered to his mama. And not that Felipe's family didn't care. It's just, I don't think they had the tools or the ground that Marcia was willing to stand upon to find her child. But she still had to fight and push and fight and push.
Kaysen gave credit to Terrence's mother for securing that deeper investigation into Calkins.
Marcia's heartfelt persistence of like, I need your help. I need you to believe me. I need you to do this. I feel like for them, the turning post was probably when he was caught in lies and they did their own investigation, you know, and then it's kind of like they really can't deny what's in their face.
Are you satisfied with how the Collier County Sheriff's Office has investigated these disappearances, at least since that initial time period?
Yes. I've personally seen and heard what they've done. I've seen the hard work.
What still needs to happen in these cases? Are there any stones unturned that you see?
Well, I would like to see a collective group get together, like us, law enforcement, whomever else, and come together with some experts in the field of profiling and put everything up on the wall. What's been searched? What's been done? You know, where should we go? Where can we search?
Kaysen feels that another case, perhaps another body found, may be the key to solving these disappearances.
I believe there's victims before, because you just don't wake up one day and say, yeah, I'm going to have two guys disappear in my custody. Probably what it's going to take to solve these two is if you can find another victim, and maybe even one that's been found that wasn't never connected. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe that would give you a new place to look.
Along with the searches in 2004, there have been other searches in other areas for evidence of the missing men. Still, Terrence's mother, Marcia, feels that law enforcement needs to be searching more regularly.
To me, there should be someone in law enforcement or search and rescue always out there looking. Somebody else does know Janine. And I think that they're just too afraid to speak up.
So you still feel like you still haven't gotten the whole story from the Collier Sheriff's Office?
I feel as if someone is covering up that does know. Yeah.
Within the agency.
Within the agency, yes.
The office of the current Collier County Sheriff said he was not available for an interview when we asked. His agency sent this statement. Any unsolved case is disturbing, but these two missing person cases are particularly so because of the commonality they share. Our detectives will continue to pursue any and all investigative means to determine what happened to these men and hopefully bring some measure of closure to their families. When I think about the lack of closure, the lack of accountability for whatever happened, I think about Terrence's mother and Felipe's brothers. I think about the children of Terrence and Felipe. I think about how the lack of justice has impacted them and our community. Activists brought up Felipe's disappearance when, in 2020, a farmworker in Immokalee, where Felipe had also lived and worked as a farmworker, was shot and killed by a Collier Sheriff's deputy. The farmworker Nicholas Morales was having a mental health crisis. He was holding gardening clippers when confronted by law enforcement. His family filed a federal lawsuit against three Collier officers and the current sheriff. At a press conference, a lawyer with the MacArthur Justice Center described a pattern of violence and impunity.
Officers in Collier County beat, tase, sick dogs on, and shoot civilians without justification. No charges are ever pressed. No substantive discipline is ever imposed. So the officers in that office come to believe they can act with impunity, and they do.
The men also came up at a Naples protest that was part of the national protest for racial justice and against police brutality after George Floyd's murder. A speaker mentioned them by name at a rally.
These men, by the way, are presumed dead by their family members. Yes, these are extreme cases of police brutality, but these and more recent local cases of abuse point to a toxic culture that tolerates an imbalanced policing of black and brown bodies.
The audio is not great, but she calls for picking out the bad apples among the police before they spoil the batch.
Bad apples can be more easily picked out before moving the remaining batch.
I talked to Terrence's mother, Marcia, by Zoom after the protests.
How do these cases play into the larger conversation about police accountability that's happening across America?
What has to happen, Janine? America needs to know how unfair the policemen have been. All of that needs to come out.
Hearing her words, hearing the comments at the protest, hearing how the farmworker killed in Immokalee by the deputy brought up memories of Felipe, it brought me back to the interview that Terrence's roommate, Jason Gonzalez, did with law enforcement long after the disappearances, the investigating the 2% conversation. The conversation reveals how accountability, trust, and closure are all interlinked, especially when it comes to the relationship between the community and the police.
You said you had some evidence, or not evidence, but a lead.
Right, yeah, that's why I wanted to talk to you.
And so I'm like, maybe he's alive. You know, because
I mean, we're
looking for closure here.
Right, you know? Absolutely.
Gonzalez brought up that his level of trust in the police had changed since Terrence disappeared. The agent assured him that they would investigate a deputy or any other corrupt official. We heard part of this clip at the start of this episode.
You're going to always have your bad apples.
Right, exactly. Now, my thing was, you know, how do you guys handle your 2%?
Oh, that's what we do. We investigate that 2%.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the reason why I got into this career, because, to investigate bad apples like that, whether it's a mayor, a city councilman, a judge, somebody that's doing something wrong, doing breaking law. Anytime a cop does something bad, it gives us all a bad name.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so.
And like I said, I like to trust you guys.
As the interview wrapped up, a Collier Sheriff's detective reassured Terrence's roommate that despite the new lead, they were still trying to figure out if Calkins had done something criminally wrong.
And I think I'm the one that can tell you right out that in no way Calkins is exonerated from any sort of wrongdoing. Okay. He's still under the microscope.
Okay.
I don't want you to think that we're trying to deviate from that program, that he's part of this, but the agent said here is that we got to follow every lead because it's going to come back to haunt us one way or the other if we don't follow every lead. Mm-hmm. And the main thing is to bring him home. That's the bottom line.
Yeah,
one way or the other.
I want to find him, you know.
In our final episode, we'll talk about the court case. We'll hear clips from court hearings and the deposition with Calkins that lasted 10 hours. We'll also get to this very important question. After 2 decades, is there any hope left for resolving this mystery.
He needs to tell the truth, like his life depend on it. I want to know what happened to my child.
Mr. Stephen Calkins, did you kill Terrence Williams?
No.
Mr. Stephen Calkins, did you kill Felipe Santos?
I object.
Tell me why. Come up with some crazy reason why Stephen Calkins would take some random black guy and kill him. I mean, really.
You know, you look at the system and you just shake your head sometimes.
The Last Ride is a collaboration of the USA Today Network Florida and WGCU Public Media, distributed by the NPR Network. I'm Janine Zeitlin, producer, reporter, writer. Audio editor and co-producer is Amanda Inscore of the Naples Daily News and the News Press. Directing and sound design by Richard Chinqui of WGCU Public Media. Reporting by Ryan Mills, Melanie Payne, Rachel Hyman Mercator, and Jake Allen. If you have any information about this case, call Southwest Florida Crime Stoppers at 800-780-8477. Please support journalism like this by subscribing to Naples Daily News, the News Press, or donating to WGCU Public Media, or supporting your local news source. If you're interested in taking your own look at the public records in these cases, the Sheriff's Office has them on their website. They're also linked on our podcast landing page, naplesnews.com/lastride. Executive producers are WGCU Executive Producer Pamela James and News Press Executive Editor Cindy McCurry-Ross. Original theme music by Christopher Russell. Audio assistance by Jared Gonzalez. Legal review by Tom Curley. Additional support from Aaron Register, Corey Lewis, Dan McCoy, and Scott Stein. If the topic of this podcast matters to you, be sure to rate the podcast wherever you get it. It makes a difference. Thanks for listening. That makes a difference, too.